Hey, hey, everyone. Welcome back to Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I am your host, Elle Ariel, and we can be found at musicjobspodcast.com. That's musicjobs with an S, podcast.com. We're also on the streaming platforms, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Android, and more. If you are listening to us on one of those platforms, if you could go ahead and give us some stars, give us some feedback, show us some love, tell your friends, subscribe, we would really appreciate it because, again, we're all about careers in music. We're all about spreading the good word about, hey, how they got that music job, talking to the movers and shakers and innovators in music today, and just getting all of their information, their career trajectory, their advice and insights. A lot of them actually have been saying they got their start with internships. So I have been scouring the World Wide Web, and when I see some internships for this fall coming up, I've just been adding them to a blog post on the website. So if you just go to musicjobspodcast.com and click on the podcast tab, and then just type in intern, you should be able to pull up that blog post all about internships. They are mostly for students, I will say that, so you will need to be able to get course credit for the internship. But it's New York, LA, Miami, Nashville, Chicago, so if you know someone who's looking for a music internship, go on and pass along the blog post, because we're all about just helping people with careers in music. So last week, I had the wonderful pleasure of speaking with Astrid Baumgartner. She is actually on the faculty at Yale School of Music. She is a life coach, career coach, and she is all about helping musicians and all creatives become entrepreneurs, and how you do that and how you tap into that and how you become successful and thinking outside of the box with business, with being an entrepreneur, just really amazing stuff. So she had a wonderful, wonderful insight and a lot of information to share. She's got a book that's coming out. So go on back and listen to that episode. I think you'll really, really get a lot out of it. This week, I had the pleasure of speaking with Scott Hawksworth, who is one of the founders of Audio Skills. You can find them at audioskills.com. They're this huge, burgeoning community of home producers, producers and musicians, you know, all about giving courses. There's a podcast, there's videos, all about helping out the starting out or maybe already established musician, producer, mixing and recording and all this amazing stuff. So Scott basically is going to walk us through his career trajectory about how he actually got a degree in business and how that has served him in starting this incredibly successful online music business. So very, very excited. And I think y'all will really enjoy it. But before we do that, we are going to kick things off with one of Scott's favorite tracks, Oasis's Don't Look Back in Anger. Here it is. How'd you get that music job?
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So tell me about your childhood. Tell me all about music, you know, growing up and what you were first exposed to and all that good stuff.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, obviously, I can't really remember what I first listened to in terms of being super young, but I know for my parents, you know, they were both really, really into music. They loved a lot of the classics like Beatles, and they were in, you know, high school and college in the 70s. So a lot of the 70s rock, you know, your Zeppelin, all that good stuff. And then they also really liked the 80s. So one of the things I really remember is listening to a lot of like 80s music. Like my mom was obsessed with Phil Collins. Aww. So that was like, you know, what's the In the Air Tonight, you know, the mm-hmm. whole the famous drum, drum part and everything. I remember being a kid, you know, and mom's like, oh, this part is great. You know, turn it up, dun, 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 you know, and then, as I mentioned, the 70s as well. So I remember my mom had, the band Yes. There was an album called Yes Fragile, and she had it on tape, and so that's the prog rock, you know. Mm-hmm. And so she put that in, and I'd listen to that, and then The other stuff was like musicals. So like the old 60s musicals like Oliver, My Fair Lady, West Side Story, all those classics. I also got exposure to that because that was also, my mom really was the musical formation. My dad loved music as well, but I spent a lot of time listening to my mom's choices. So that was really the first kind of exposure I got to music was mm-hmm. through her and those kinds of things. Yeah.
That's great. Now, did you have any piano lessons or any instrument lessons when you were a kid?
Yeah. So I did. We had like a little keyboard and I actually didn't have any formal lessons for piano until I was in high school. But mm-hmm. I did have the keyboard around. So one thing I did is I really liked the Beverly Hills Cop theme. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Axel F. Yeah. Uh-huh. So, because my dad actually had a record of it. So again, you know, very 80s, right?
Yeah.
And so I learned what the theme was. So I would play it on this little Casio over and over and annoy the heck out of my sister, I'm sure. But I didn't have any formal lessons in piano until I was in high school. I did have voice lessons through chorus at my church, and that really started in like middle school. Mm-hmm. So I did have some voice instruction, but I didn't take my first true piano lesson until I was a freshman in high school.
Interesting. Now, did you have any sort of musical aspirations in high school? Were you like, I want to start a band, or I want to, you know, take this to the next level? Like, where was your mind at?
I think I always wanted to be, I actually did want to be in a band, and I always wanted to do something musical with my life. I just didn't know what it was. And I'm someone who, I'm like a pretty practical person, and my family is very practical. Like, you know, I mean, we'll talk about this later, but I went to college and it was like, get a business degree. Okay. You know, mm-hmm. do the very practical thing. So I was like, oh geez, I love music, but if I do music full time, you know, you always hear these horror stories like, oh, you just end up being a music teacher. And that's a really, really tough time, you know, economically for some people and all this kind of stuff. Not that it's not great work and very important, but, you know, so I was very like, oh man, you know, I want to be practical about this, but I did want to join a band, and I actually ended up doing so in high school, but it was like kind of an informal band where what we did, I went to a all boys high school, and basically, just imagine you put a bunch of boys together and just multiply fart jokes and all this kind of stuff. You know, just bring it to the highest level, right?
Right.
So we made an album where we basically like just had, it was all in jokes about our high school and about certain teachers, not in a malicious way, but like just making fun of certain classes and all this kind of stuff. And it kind of just came together. And so we sort of made a band that way and recorded an album. It's still out there, I'm sure, somewhere. But yeah, that was really, I was happy to do that because I wanted to be a part of that. But in terms of larger career aspirations with music, it was very much something like, I know I love music. I know I like, you know, playing piano and singing and doing all this. I don't know how to do that as a career and have it be something that is stable and makes me comfortable, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, totally. Although I am curious about this album. Did your classmates, like, did people actually, like, you know, was it popular? Like, did people get it?
And oh, yeah.
So that's pretty amazing, because that's kind of actually more of a like smart business head. Do you know what I mean? Like thinking like, we're going to create something that we definitely have an audience. People are definitely going to enjoy this versus, man, I'm just feeling this in my heart and I got to get it out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So what we did with it is we recorded it through basically the end of our junior and then into our senior years. Mm-hmm. And again, none of it was malicious, but I would say some of it was controversial. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, there were some maybe jokes about the all-girls school that was down the street and things like that, you know, friendly jokes. And by the way, my girlfriend at the time was from the all-girls school. So it was like, it was all very in-jokey. But so what our plan was for release is we'd all graduated, because we were like, you know what? We don't want to get this out there and then get hauled into the principal's office or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. So we waited till we graduated, and then we uploaded it online and we burned a few CDs and we like kind of handed them out. We handed a couple to our favorite teachers who were like super chill and would totally get it and really like it. We did that. And then apparently it was just like, it was like the big thing at my school at St. Charles is what it is. People were listening to it. And someone even at their prom requested, we made this like techno song. So, okay. This is kind of lame, but I think it's also kind of amusing. So at St. Charles, you were required to take 2 years of Latin because it was an all boys college prep school. So just think Dead Poets Society in terms of that thing. And you had to take 2 years of Latin. And in Latin, there's this thing where you decline nouns because there's just different, a noun can be, have different endings and you use it as different parts of speech or whatever. So basically all this is a techno song where we were just declining this noun, the noun for girl, which is puella, puellae. And we're just doing that. And it's like this techno beat and someone requested it at their prom. And I think they played it.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
So basically the nerdiest thing you can think of, right. But we did make our little impact and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you did. That's awesome. And like I said, it's like you were doing something again, that was pretty clever. And that you knew there was this audience, you know, that would appreciate it and get it and really enjoy it. So I do think that that speaks to kind of your, you know, music business acumen, even at, you know, a young age.
Sure, yeah.
So talk to us a little bit then about where you went to college and what happened with music during that time.
Yeah, so I went to college at Ohio State in Columbus. And, you know, I was mentioning this earlier, but I really have kind of a be practical side. And I think I've since sort of smoothed that out a bit as I've gotten older, but really like you need to be practical. And my parents, same thing, you know, it's like, oh, hey, there's student loans. There's all this money you got to pay. You know, you need a degree that you can get a guaranteed job with and all this kind of stuff. And that's a good message. But I think that there's a lot to be said about, you know, creativity, obviously, and pursuing those fields. But basically what it meant for me is I was like, well, I guess I'm going to get a business degree. And I like business. But I really sort of went away from music in college. I had been taking piano lessons, but then as things happen in college, you know, there's parties, there's, you know, all-nighters, all this kind of stuff. I just sort of let it slip away and I kind of stopped taking lessons. So I really didn't have a ton of musical like study or anything in college. What I did have is I still was listening to music. And, you know, I was fortunate in that, you know, when I went to college, music sharing services were still around, right? But the one thing is you had the college network where you were connected to all the computers in the dorm, you know? Mm-hmm. And so one thing you do is we had a, and I don't remember what the program was called, but basically like you could go in and people in the dorm could upload their whole music libraries. And by the way, everybody buy music, don't do this, but I'm just telling you what I did. But basically I just like downloaded all these huge libraries. And so really I kind of continued my music education by being exposed to new genres, new bands. I discovered basically what's my favorite band, which is Oasis. I really discovered them in college. Mm-hmm. And all of that kind of thing is really what I did in college. But yeah, it's sort of in terms of my specific study, kind of took a back burner in college.
Right. But still, I mean, there was a music education going on.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think that's one of those things where anyone who's interested in music and wants to get better, whether it's playing, writing songs, whatever you're doing, mixing, mastering, any of that, you can always just listen to an album, whether it's one you've listened to a million times before, listen to it again and listen to it critically or something like that, or whether it's, you know, something completely different and really expand your horizons because your brain is always working, right? Mm-hmm. And you're going to, if you're listening to music, even if it's just, this is pure pleasure, your brain is absorbing those melodies, those chord progressions, mm-hmm. even the lyrics themselves. And you know, if you're trying to write lyrics and rhymes and all these kinds of things. So, really that you can always educate yourself with music, grab a new album and listen to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're also sort of absorbing strong structure.
Exactly.
And, you know, the sort of the, either the pop song or rock song formula, you know, okay, 3.5, 4 minutes. Mm-hmm. I totally agree. I think there is sort of this osmosis process that happens when you really listen to a lot of different music and a lot of different genres. You start to see patterns, or you start to see a lack of patterns, or certain, like you said, chord progressions, or you know, the same chord progressions, but like totally different beats, et cetera, et cetera. So absolutely, I totally agree with you.
Yeah, and I mean, I would add to that too, just to kind of emphasize the point even more. If you ever watch, you know, directors or things like that, I think it was J.J. Abrams who directed the Star Wars, new Star Wars movie and all this other stuff. And, you know, he comes from a film background. Mm-hmm. And he said to his father, he's like, oh, you know, I want to go to college and study film. And his dad basically was like, don't do that. Go to college and study something else and then watch a lot of movies and have experiences and go out and meet people, because movies are not, it's not like some academic, I mean, it is academic, but it's not what you really want to do to make great movies is learn people, mm-hmm. you know, and watch other movies and absorb all of that. So I think that's kind of the same with a lot of music. I mean, of course you can get into the classical study and all that great stuff, but to write songs and to produce and things like that, go meet people, go listen to all different kinds of stuff. And that can do it. That can be a huge part of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I found too, with my previous guests, it's a real toss up in terms of, do you need a formal music mm-hmm. education? Do you need to pursue, you know, do you need to go to a music school? It honestly is a total toss up. It really doesn't seem to be, you know, essential one way or the other. You know, everybody mm-hmm. has obviously a different experience with it. So no, it's a really interesting point. So what happened upon graduation? Where were you headed?
Yeah. So upon graduation, I had a couple job offers. One was in Cleveland and then the other was in Chicago. And no offense to Cleveland, but I basically did a straw poll of all my friends and they were like, wait, why are you even asking? Go to Chicago. and so I took it and I went to Chicago. It was a small business. I've always kind of been more entrepreneurial, and I've always kind of had a fear of the large corporate four walls office space type, you know, case of the Mondays sort of thing. So that's why I also went for a smaller business, which was in Chicago. And so, you know, I graduated and then I moved here to Chicago and started working and really kind of doing the whole business thing and not really doing much with music. It was one of those things where I kind of was just like, well, man, I got these student loans. Again, that practical side, right? I was mm-hmm. like, oh my gosh, I got to pay this down. I got to do this and that. But I the whole time as I was doing that, and this was for years, I was really missing music. And I would mm-hmm. say maybe after college, in a weird way, was probably my least amount of kind of musical experience in my life, because I wasn't even listening to as much music as I used to. And I was just kind of going 9 to 5 and doing that whole deal. So that's kind of what happened immediately after college. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, after a while, I started getting really antsy and realizing that one thing, I was going back to high school and recording that album with my friends and how much fun I had doing that. And it wasn't just, you know, obviously I was hanging out with my friends. That was great. But the actual process of recording it and writing the music and, you know, coming up with the lyrics and things like that, I was basically the singer on all of these songs, you know, most of them. And really liking the process of getting in there. I mean, we had a full band. We had a drum kit we were miking up and everything like that. Mm-hmm. And we were doing it in my buddy's bedroom. That whole process, I was like, man, I really want to learn exactly how to do that, because my buddy was running everything. In fact, to the point where I don't even know what software he was using. I don't think it was Pro Tools, but and I kept thinking about it, like, man, I want to learn about this. Man, I need music in my life. How can I do that? Mm-hmm. Right? That was the big question that I had.
So I actually want to go back a little bit to the small business, because mm-hmm. the pattern I'm seeing with these podcasts is that there is such a marriage between being a musician, being an artist, and being an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if you can kind of talk about that, like what you started picking up when you were doing the quote unquote practical business and like observing how, what it took to make sort of a small business run or how to make a small business successful?
Yeah, I would say, well, I'll say this about school in general. I learned more and you'll go to college, everybody, but, I learned more about business working in that small business for in like 4 months than I learned in 4 years at Ohio State. And by the way, again, I'm not bashing Ohio State's quality of education. It's just, you learn so much by doing. Mm-hmm. One of the big things I noticed as I kind of started working this small business was when you are in an entrepreneurial type organization or you yourself are becoming an entrepreneur, you don't have the kind of traditional corporate bloat, you might say, that people consider. Like, you don't have five different bosses.
Right.
And you don't have five other people on your team and 10 employees below you and all this kind of stuff. So what that means is that generally, if something needs to be done and you aren't going to do it, it's likely not going to get done. And that's like a really interesting thing because I think, you know, and again, I had an internship at a larger organization and I just saw it was easier to be like, oh, actually, ooh, I can't get to this. Can you do that? You know, or oh, hey, let's both work on this. In small business, depending on how small the organization is, of course, but you just have a lot more impact and it's like, hey, you either do this or it doesn't get done.
Yeah.
And then on the flip side, what I was just saying is the impact. That's the other thing, is your decisions and the things you do that can drive the business like completely. Mm-hmm. So you come up with an idea, you have to execute on it, and then you execute on it. If that idea works or it's good, that can drastically impact the direction of the business. You know, someone working at Google, really unlikely if they're just, you know, kind of a low level, entry level, or even a little above, they're not going to necessarily change the course of the entire company, right? Mm-hmm. Not so in small business. Like anybody, I mean, an intern working for a startup could come up with something that changes the course of that startup. Right. So that was the other thing I noticed, is that just everything has a bigger impact. And there's an awesome part to that. And there's also a lot of pressure to that because it's like, you know, if you mess up, it works the other way as well.
Right. Totally.
So those were some of the big things I noticed. And then the other one is just the amount of hats that you have to wear. Mm-hmm. The amount of hats that you have to wear in a small business or entrepreneurial startup, that kind of deal, is a lot. You know, you might have one title or you might be doing one thing, but you have all the titles. You're CEO, you're COO, you're chief marketing guy. Like, you are everything.
Right.
Because you don't know what you'll have to deal with, you know, like you may have to deal with just some random state laws or something. You got to get this certificate of good standing or something. Okay, well, right there, you're kind of doing an administration type thing.
Yeah.
But then you may have to do something completely different and come up with a marketing plan for something. Okay, well, now you're just a marketing guy. You're a director of marketing. Mm-hmm. You have so many different hats that you'll have to wear and have to be prepared to be flexible. And then the last thing I noticed, and this really goes hand in hand with what I was saying about small organizations and big impacts and all this kind of stuff, a small business can change direction so fast. Mm. And it's just like that.
Right.
And they have to. That's like by their very nature, because if something isn't working and you've got, you know, only X amount of runway left in your business or whatever it is, runway as in cash in the bank, that kind of thing. If you only have that and you're doing a strategy that's not working, in a large organization, you might have a huge initiative and you might need to do a strategy shift. And that strategy shift is going to take 1, 2, 3, 4 years, right? Mm-hmm. Like, okay, we're going to wind down this project and we're working on this one now. In small business, you are not afforded that luxury of time, A. And B, I guess the nice thing is you can shift and it keeps you leaner and meaner. Mm. So you might come in on a Monday and you guys have been doing this project. We've been working on this project for a year. But you know what? We realized it is not really working.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? We're going to come up with a new project, a new strategy, a new path, and we're going to be on that path by Wednesday.
Wow.
You know?
Right.
And we're doing that, and we're shutting everything down that wasn't working. Mm-hmm. And that is one of those things I didn't realize until I was working in it. I was like, wow. So we're just like blowing up everything we used to do. Yep. And we're doing this now. Yep. All right.
Wow. That's amazing. And I also think of, like, there's the analogy of big ships, right? Like, it's so much more difficult to sort of like change direction. It takes a lot of several steps to like actually maneuver a very large vessel. Whereas when you have like a speedy little vessel, you're right. You can change directions on a dime, and you can trash whatever trajectory you were going in and switch it to a new trajectory. So I think that's really interesting. Well, let's get back to the music. So you were talking about how you missed the music thing, the recording thing, and what were kind of your next steps in that?
Yeah. So my next step was, I was like, well, you know what? I'm just going to start doing this. I got to figure out what is involved. Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't even know what a DAW was, right?
Yeah.
So I Googled around a little bit.
You better just say what it is for our audience.
digital audio workstation. So basically your Logic Pro, your Pro Tools, whatever software you use to record, mix, all that good stuff.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. So I didn't even know what that was. Mm-hmm. And which again is funny because I'd like recorded an album, but I guess I wasn't a part of that specific part of it. Mm-hmm. And I just had my buddy just handed me a mic and was like, sing into this. Okay. Uh-huh. So I started the Google search thing as many people might do. One thing I did is I found that they had a guitar center near me, and they had these nice like intro to recording courses for free on like a Saturday morning. Mm-hmm. So I got up and I went to one, and I brought my notebook, you know, all bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and I was like, all right, let's see what this is all about. And I was actually overwhelmed because, you know, the guy, I mean, he was smart, he knew what he was talking about, but he just was throwing all this stuff at you. And when you start talking about recording, that's one of the big things, is the jargon.
Yeah.
You know, I was just defining what a DAW is. That's where a lot of people, and I was no exception, can be like, whoa, okay, what? You know? So anyway, this guy's like throwing all this stuff, and he's talking about gain, and he's talking about, you know, audio clipping and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, okay, whoa. So I basically took a step back, and then I was like, all right, well, I'm going to buy Home Recording for Dummies. And then, you know, it really kind of languished a bit because, you know, I got these books, and I did what many people do, is you get a book and it sits there, mm-hmm. and you don't really do anything about it. So it was a little more time before I finally was like, you know what? Screw this. I got to just take a course. And so what I did is I signed up for a course that was, I think an 8-week course, local here in Chicago. And it was more for DJs, and this is like kind of a problem I ended up having and what really led to my epiphany. It was for DJs, and it was just very specific to DJs. So it wasn't like writing your own music and recording it and all that kind of stuff. It was, a lot of it was about, you were working in Ableton, mm-hmm. Which is a type of DAW, and a lot of working with existing music and splicing and all these kinds of things and warping tracks and all these kind of stuff. So it was very specific to DJs making, you know, mixes or things like that to get gigs and things like that. So it wasn't exactly what I had been looking for. Mm-hmm. And I was pretty unhappy with it because I was like, nah, this isn't exactly what I've been looking for. So it was at that point that I said, you know what? I'm going to do this on my own. I'm going to learn this my way. And so through the process of getting books, I started just reading everything I could online. I finally started to understand the jargon, all that kind of stuff. And then I was like, you know, thinking back about my experience and how overwhelmed I was and how frustrated I was, you know, at the beginning and trying to figure this stuff out and all that. I said, you know what, maybe I could do what I really wanted to do, is combine business and music. Mm-hmm. What if I did that? And that is how Audio Skills really was born.
Okay. That's amazing. Can you walk us through sort of the first the first few days of that? Like, how did that manifest?
I was interested in doing something. And so I have a couple partners that work on Audio Skills with me. But at the time, it was only one partner. And I called him up and I said, hey, I've got an idea for this business, and I think it could be really good. Because when you're starting a business, it's like, well, what problem can I solve for people? Mm-hmm. You know, and who are our customers going to be? And are the customers there? And you know, it's a harsh reality. Do the customers have money? You know, like, can you get people who will give you money for something?
Yeah.
Right. Those first days, there was a lot of just conversations about what does the space itself look like? Are there customers here? And can you do it? And how can you do it, importantly, better than maybe some of the others are doing it? And there's a lot of people doing it, and they're all doing it. A lot of them are doing it really, really well. Mm-hmm. What can you do that's different?
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
So a lot of those questions were answered in the beginning, and then it just became a process of, you know, okay, we're going to do this. What is the strategy? Like, you know, we need a website. So we need a brand name. We need to think about making a product, and you start from the product. So one of the things that I think is different from my experience than a lot of people that I know kind of in this space, a lot of them just sort of fell into it because they were already doing mixing for friends, or they were already doing something else. And
yeah.
And they were like, yeah, I'm going to start a website. Me, I came at it from, I know all the web stuff. I know all that because of working in business and online and all that kind of stuff. I'm coming at it from, I am going in it specifically to start a business mm-hmm. on this. So yeah, in those early days, it was a lot of just like deciding on the brand name. That's really huge. Getting your domain, starting to build your website. Then for me, it was like a lot of writing and stuff as well. Cause you know, we had a blog and things like that. So it was like, okay, type this up. Yeah. Does that answer the question?
Yeah. I mean, I'm wondering if you were intimidated at all, because you know, it is such a huge, I don't know, I'd almost call it like a rabbit hole.
Oh yes.
And of gearheads. And you know, we've talked before, I'm a Logic Pro girl, and
yeah.
There is like an infinite number, you know, there's gear sluts and there's a Logic Pro forum. But again, it's like this total rabbit hole of like, how much information do you actually want? How much of it can you actually parse and understand? And how much of it can you actually utilize in your own day-to-day operation and or the current problem that you're facing with your DAW or whatever that you're trying to solve? So how did you, was there any sort of hesitation or difficulty with that, knowing that there was such a huge ocean of, you know, these gearheads and these super technical people that have been doing it for decades type of thing?
100%. 100%. Yeah. I had a good amount of worry about it at points because, you know, I had studied some of this stuff, but I was not formally trained. I went to business school, right?
Right.
And, you know, you kind of mentioned gear sluts and stuff like that. And if you go around on Reddit and stuff like that, some of these audio guys, a lot of them are just wonderful people. They're the nicest you could possibly meet. The men and women doing it are awesome. But some of them are like super elitist and super, they're big gatekeepers. Yeah. Is what I would call.
Yeah, that's a perfect word. Perfect.
Yeah, it's gatekeeping. It's oh well, oh you use KRK rockets. Ooh, well you're a noob and your music's going to be terrible. You know, that kind of attitude. And so that was something I kind of had to work through, because you know we start this stuff and I start like making, I start writing articles and I started making like some videos and things like that, some instructionals and just kind of sharing the things that I'd learned. And then you post this on Facebook. And you get that first comment from someone like, oh, this guy's an idiot. Like, oh,
God,
look at his acoustic treatment. Oh, what an idiot. Oh, you know, like all that kind of stuff. And it's just like people just bashing you. And you're like, and then I'm sitting here. I'm like, I'm trying to help people and build a business, man.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Geez.
So, yeah, that was definitely one of the biggest things I had to get over, because I had to believe that. Through all of this, I actually wanted to lean into my strength. And I was thinking about it. What is my strength? And what can I do that is different than others? And other people, again, doing great stuff, have all come from, many of them have, I'd say most of them, have come from the audio world. So they've been recording and mixing for clients for a decade. They studied it in school, and they went to school for 2-4 years, whatever, to learn this. And they've done amazing things. And that is a really, really powerful thing. Mm-hmm. But what I thought my strength could be is I actually was on the flip side because I was like a lot of, you know, audio skills members and people who watch our videos and things like that. I didn't know it. And I actually went through the process of trying to figure it all out.
Yeah.
And so I went from the process of, I don't know this jargon. I'm overwhelmed by it.
Mm-hmm.
And that whole process. And in my search, I even thought about going back to school for audio. But then that practical side of me was like, dude, you can't take $100,000 out and go to, you know, whatever, Columbia, Chicago, downtown.
Right.
You just can't. You got to do another way, right?
Mm-hmm.
So leaning into that and kind of realizing what my perspective was and that I felt that there was value in it, that kind of helped me overcome any anxiety of being overwhelmed by all of this or being intimidated by what I didn't know and things like that. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing I would say is having a business kind of helped me learn even more about audio because it sort of focused my journey a bit. So, you know, I had all the building blocks of my audio knowledge, but it sort of focused it because it's like, well, I've got to write an article and I want to write an article about gain staging. So that makes it really easy because it's like, you know what? I need to just make sure that whatever I'm putting in that article is correct and it's going to help people like me as much as possible. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to write this article. I'm going to make sure I'm doing my research and I'm presenting the facts as they are, and it's just going to be focused on gain staging.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of was my own curriculum almost, mm-hmm. if that makes any sense.
Yeah. And again, I think that that's so smart because it's like people who write technical manuals. You don't want the super, like the guy who never goes out, the isolator, engineer, nerd dude who like doesn't really have a lot of social interaction to write the technical manual because
right.
it's not going to be in layman's terms. It's kind of that same thing. You realize that your strength was like, I know what it's like to be a layman. I know what it's
yes.
like to not have a clue of what a DAW is, what operating system am I using, you know, like whatever
yeah.
it is. And so therefore I know what people are going to need and I'm going to be able to really break it down to easily digestible, easy to understand terms that will basically in effect reach a wider audience, right? Because it's a niche audience who understands that's just how the world works. It's a niche audience that understands like the very super technical intensive in anything in engineering and rocket science, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the wider audience. Like how do you make it fun and interesting and accessible to the wider audience? And I think that's exactly what you've done in effect. And I think that was so smart that instead of sort of being intimidated and beaten down by the, you know, the comic book store guy from
yeah,
the
yeah.
Simpsons, you know, telling you, you know, you're shitty and instead saying, you know what, I have a mission here, you know, and that's to really make this more accessible to a wider audience.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So how did the business evolve? You obviously started doing these videos and blogs, and then where did it kind of go from there?
Yeah. So, you know, I should say the business actually wasn't audio skills at the beginning. It was a site called recordingexcellence.com, mm-hmm.
okay.
Which is still there. And that's, you know, I loved it. I thought it was fun. But basically, so what we started doing is we started writing articles and things like that. And then what we got into was actually DVDs. I kid you not.
Hmm.
And this was kind of my business partner kind of came up with this and he was like, you know what? We can send people DVDs. It's something physical they can hold. There's still a lot of people that want something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of started focusing on that, but then we realized that there's a lot of overhead there, needless to say.
Yeah,
there's a lot of costs there. And we did have, you know, a solution for getting it shipped and made and all that kind of stuff. But it's still, there was cost, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is we kind of realized that recording excellence, it's got recording in it and that's cool. But it's like, yeah, but audio is so much more than just recording. It's mixing, it's mastering, it's production, it's songwriting, it's all of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
As we kind of went through it, it was like, you know what? We want to make a site and we want to make a community because just sending people one-off DVDs and stuff like that, okay, that's all right. But having a community, that is really where the power can happen because that was one of the things that frustrated me is when I was trying to learn, what you really need is, yeah, the courses can help. You know, they're important, but it really helps to have other people who have either had the same struggles as you or have more knowledge than you, helping guide you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And people you can bounce your work off of and all this kind of stuff. So with that, we basically said, okay, maybe not on the DVDs anymore. And let's build a community. And three, let's broaden it to audio, because recording is too niche. It's too focused. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's how Audio Skills was born. That's where we kind of shifted. You know, I was talking about that pivot earlier, that businesses need to make. This was a pivot that, you know, we did it in, you know, a few weeks.
Wow.
In terms of getting started with the Audio Skills and all that, because it was one of those things where we were looking at, you know, our runway and our cash reserves. And we're like, more's going out than's coming in. This isn't good. We got to figure it out. So that's kind of what happened.
Wow. So when you talk about building this community, were you thinking like another forum, or what was sort of your vision of that?
Yeah. So I really, from the beginning, it was a membership site. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that is just my business acumen kind of informing me, and membership sites are a really good model, in general across all kinds of niches and subjects. But it's also a great way to, I guess you can, if you build a membership site and bring everyone together, not just with a forum, but like with, you know, an exclusive Facebook group and, you know, a special email list and all these kinds of things, you can have a lot more influence over it. And it's a lot more, there's a lot more ownership there, mm-hmm. I guess. Mm-hmm. And I think you can also control the quality and things like that, and really make it pretty robust these days. So that was kind of the philosophy behind the membership site, and not just doing something like, oh, let's make a forum or, mm-hmm. or whatever, or, oh, let's just make the Facebook group. This was a lot more, hey, let's do something that we can bring people together. And also, you know, people who want to join a paid membership site, they can, and that will help the business, you know, continue to rock and roll.
Mm-hmm. Cause I know you also have a YouTube presence. Was that a way to still sort of be available to an outside audience, like sort of a way to get more people in, or what were your kind of marketing techniques?
Yeah. So 100%. So there's the YouTube channel, and then there's also, and the biggest one is actually the Audio Skills podcast. So these were the two sort of, I guess, yeah, marketing arms, because, you know, I realize, man, times are tough. Not everybody can afford to be a part of a membership site. And I still wanted to reach people, and I still wanted to help people. So that's kind of where the YouTube channel sort of came about, and also the podcast. And then that was another way to, specifically with the podcast, was to learn from other experts. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things that I wanted to do is sort of be a bridge between people who have all this knowledge and still to this day know way more than I do, because these people have been mixing or mastering for two decades, right? Mm-hmm. And be a bridge for, if I can get this guy or gal to come on the show and I can just pepper them and be like, hey, you know, tell me, how do you get something to sound good with compression? You know, what's your philosophy? Mm-hmm. That's the kind of thing that really is awesome, to have those experts come in and share that kind of knowledge, and, you know, and have it be free, and have anyone who wants to learn about that, yeah, okay, put on our episode and listen to it. And then if you want to dive deeper and you want to go into some of these courses I have, even run by some of these experts, then yeah, boom, we're here for you. You join us. But yeah, the YouTube channel and the podcast were really the main kinds of ways to reach out there.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's so smart. And then what are the plans for Audio Skills in the future? Like, where do you see, especially as, you know, the music landscape is changing so much, like where do you kind of envision the business going in the next few years?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to say, but I think for me, one of the things that I've really kind of gotten into is actually going beyond music and into audio itself.
Nice.
So one of the things, you know, we're on a podcast right now. So one of the things that I've really been interested in is podcasting in general.
Yeah.
And making that accessible, because a lot of people have a lot of questions about audio there, and they're maybe not necessarily, you know, musical people, but they have a lot to say, and they want to reach folks and all that kind of stuff. So that kind of audio skills is still very, very important.
Yeah.
So I would say that in the future, could be big, just spreading beyond music, and then just more of the same, more of, you know, covering different kinds of genres, covering, I mean, it's always changing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like Logic is going to release some update, and it's gonna be a big update. It's gonna, you know, change how it works or whatever. You know, Pro Tools is gonna come out with something new eventually. You know, all these kinds of things. There's new plugins, there's new techniques. So one of the things is it is a constantly evolving field.
Yep.
And so in terms of the future, I think it's just, can you roll with it? And can you give people what they want, you know, as music tastes evolve? You know, right now a lot of it is people, you know, bedroom producers and kind of a lot of the pop and hip hop and all that kind of stuff, and it's great. You know, that's what's allowed Ableton to have its kind of meteoric rise and all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We may have something in 20 years where all of a sudden everyone's trying to go back to that garage rock sound, and it's like, okay, well, how do I record in my garage, you know, and those kinds of things. So rolling with the industry itself is really important. And then the only other thing would be is just a and I don't know that we'll do this, but I think the business side of bands and artists and that kind of thing is really, really interesting stuff. The how do you support yourself as an artist? You know, and that's why I love your podcast, because that is such an important question, because I think, you know, we've gone through and we've talked about the practical side for me and all this kind of stuff. I think that, you know, in our world, everything is so expensive. It's so difficult to, you know, oh, you got bills, you got all this and that.
Mm-hmm.
I think helping creators and creative people support themselves with their art is one of the best possible things we can do, because the sad thing that I have in my life, and I ended up in, you know, a really great place, but I look back sometimes and I'm bummed that I wasn't doing this, you know, 10 years ago, because I was like, well, there's no money in it, you know, mm-hmm. or like, you can't support yourself with music. You know, I want to stamp out that attitude in anyone, because I think that's not the best attitude.
Beautiful. And I think too, you know, what you were saying about in terms of the demands changing, you know, technology changing. And I absolutely agree with you in that we don't know. Obviously content creation is just going faster and faster and faster and faster. More and more and more and more platforms are coming out. And, you know, these platforms need music. These platforms need audio. You know, it just sort of keeps snowballing. And so it's an exciting time, but it's also a very uncertain time. And I think you're absolutely right on the money that it's sort of like we have to keep our eye on the future, and also, again, how we can serve, you know, these bigger and bigger audiences and people that want to jump into the game and don't want to be hindered by, oh, there's no money, or, oh, it's too technical, I can't learn it, or, mm-hmm. you know, things like that. So I think you bring up some brilliant points. Can you just tell people where to find your podcast, you know, tell them about the website, just give them all the good stuff?
Yeah, sure. So the website is audioskills.com. And if you're interested in the podcast, it's audioskills.com/podcast. And we're on Spotify, iTunes. Seriously, search Audio Skills, one word, and you'll find us. And then YouTube, or youtube.com/audioskills. So those are really the big things. And, you know, if you go to our website, we've got a bunch of articles. We've got really a ton of stuff that are really awesome. We also have a number of PDFs available for download, tips for EQ, tips for compression, tips for mastering, tips for mixing, all this kind of stuff to really kind of get your feet wet. And whether you're pure beginner or even someone who knows a bit and wants to just kind of take your music to the next level, my goal with Audio Skills is to give you something to take away. So audioskills.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Scott. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Another fantastic episode, if I do say so myself, with the one and only Scott Hawksworth of Audio Skills. Again, you can find him at audioskills.com. Go on and check out his incredible podcast, which I have been privileged to be a guest on, and his YouTube channel. And you can sign up to be a member on his website and take advantage of all the incredible course offerings that they have and join an incredible community of very, very talented individuals. So thanks again to Scott for sharing that with us and giving us some inspiration with the whole music and business marriage. I just love it. So again, I am your host, L. Ariel, and you can find all my music and musings at my website, lariel-music.com. That's lariel-music.com. I'm on social media at lariel-music, and also Music Jobs Podcast is also on social media, so you can follow us at Music Jobs Podcast. We're on the Twitter and the Facebook and the Instagram. So again, I hope you have a wonderful week. Stay cool if it is hot in your neck of the woods. I want you to take good care. Have a wonderful, productive, amazing week. And remember, we're going to keep on hustling, pursue that dream, and don't you give up.